Today's episode is brought to you by Radcasters. It's my latest venture, a podcasting school, which will take you from fear, procrastination and overwhelm to podcasting like a pro in 6 short, fun weeks. So if you're considering starting a podcast or you've started one and it's just not getting the kind of traction that you want, then head over to radcasters.com and check out the Radcasters Podcasting School. Today's chat is with Shalom Doran from Rockstar Birth magazine. Shalom is a friend of mine, and I really wanted to get her on the show because the message that she's spreading is so incredibly powerful and important. You know, I have an 18-month-old daughter, and my birthing process was not quite to plan at all. It was 75 hours and it ended in an emergency C-section. And I actually feature in the magazine because although it was at times a pretty scary experience, I really empowered myself through the birthing process. And that's what Shalom's magazine is all about. It's about sharing positive birth stories to help women feel empowered in their birthing experience. And that has such a big, huge flow-on effect throughout the world. So if you know someone who's pregnant, please share this conversation. And if not, that's cool. There are so many parallels between pregnancy, birthing, and business. So there is something in this chat for everyone. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
When I was 18, I finished uni and decided to go over to the UK to meet some of my family because my parents were from the UK and our extended family lived there. And the evening before I left, we went out for a family meal. I distinctly remember my dad saying to me something like, "Who knows what it will be like when you come back? You could be married, you might have kids, you know, anything's possible." And I was like, "Dad, me having kids? Like, are you serious? This body is a temple." I actually uttered those words. He's never let me forget it because, you know, sure enough, I'm now 40 and have 3 children and, you know, a whole history of experience behind me. But it's a really funny memory in that I was just so clear that I was going to take over the world and I was going to do all this amazing corporate stuff, and kids just, you know, weren't on my radar at all. You know, fast forward 2 marriages and 3 children. And I found myself about 18 months ago having just had my youngest babe. And I did do the 15 years of corporate, but I was suddenly in this situation where I was like, what now? What's the bit? I don't want to go back to corporate. I've got these 2 young babies. And I was really a little bit nervous, I guess, about what's next for me. What have I got to offer? What could I do in the world? I was fortunate enough that I had had 2 really amazing birth experiences with my youngest children, and in the process of preparing for those, had done lots of research and looked at all different births and birth preparation and breathing and calm breathing and all this amazing stuff. And I remember thinking, I wonder if other women want to know about that sort of stuff. Like, I had to go and find it out. But I wonder if there are other pregnant women out there who would be keen to have a really cool birth experience. And so I put together a very basic site, not really having a clue about what I was doing. Sat with that for about 6 months and shared stuff that was of interest to me. And then it was about 9 months ago that I was up at about 3 o'clock in the morning one day with one of my kids, and I had this flash of inspiration, and that was that I was going to take the information that I had been learning and sharing at a very basic level on a, you know, a basic Facebook page, and create an online magazine out of it, but that I was going to be really specific about sharing the information such that it was relevant to a particular stage of pregnancy. So this wasn't going to be a quarterly magazine that went out. It was going to be a 9-issue for 9 months of pregnancy magazine and 3 issues for the 3 months afterwards. So that's where I'm at the moment. But I guess it was just, you know, if I look back historically or retrospectively, the journey from the corporate going to take over the world and kids are just not on my radar to being a mum that works from home with toddlers and spends her days curating and editing and writing about vaginas and placentas and birth. Like, it's hilarious. It's just sort of, how did that happen? You know, it's a leap.
For sure. So I know that you're really passionate about people feeling empowered in their birth experience. And I should probably explain that you and I know each other. We are, we've been mastermind buddies and, you know, we're kind of part of a little support network that we've got going on. You know, I know a part of your story, but for those people who have never heard it before, what led you to be really passionate about empowered births?
So for my first birth experience, I wanted an all-natural water birth in the birth center. And I fully believed that that was what was going to happen. I told my husband for 9 months that no matter what I say or do, do not let me have an epidural. And I just assumed, naively, that because I was a woman, I would just have a baby and that I wouldn't need any intervention or support. My experience was not like that, and I ended up having a very high intervention birth experience. And although I was stoked with my amazing daughter at the end, I totally remember thinking almost immediately, like within the first 10 minutes that she was placed on me, thinking that wasn't what I expected. Like, she's awesome, but something just didn't work for me there. Like, am I broken? Did I fail? You know, am I soft because I begged for an epidural? You know, and more importantly, I guess I was thinking, are women's bodies dysfunctional? Are we really that badly designed that myself and a bazillion other women are struggling to have a natural childbirth experience? That sort of stuck at the back of my mind. And so when I was then moving on to have my second and third births, I actually decided to have them at home, which is a decision that's not for everybody. But in making that decision, I was also needing to take a lot more responsibility for my birth experience. I needed to be more informed and I needed to be more empowered about what I was doing. I needed to own that birth. And that for me is a really important word. I think that every woman has the absolute right to own their birth experience wherever and however and with whomever they choose to birth. So this is not about every woman needing to have a home birth under a full moon with Enya playing in the background, you know, at all. It's about finding the right birth experience for you, and that might absolutely be choosing the top obstetrician in town and wanting a cesarean to be scheduled. And I fully support that because I just think that it's so important that the woman is making the decision about what is happening to her body and what experience she's going to have, because those experiences are so fundamental to our then early motherhood days, and they have a ripple effect across so many other parts of our lives, our relationship with our bodies postpartum, our relationships with our lovers, our bonding with our child, often our ability to then breastfeed. It's just so many things, and we just don't talk about it. And we talk about the fact that, you know, 30 or 40 or 50% of women end up having unplanned cesarean sections, and a little bit like they've just gone to have, you know, their eyebrows waxed. It's like, I just had a cesarean. And because it seems to have become so common, but also because it's almost like women aren't allowed to talk about the fact that they had a journey that unfolded that they weren't expecting and that they don't feel empowered about. And I think that it's just really important that new mums feel empowered and informed about their decisions, whatever they are and however their birth journeys unfold. So for me, that was based on the fact that I had a very high intervention first birth. It didn't turn out the way I wanted. And then I went on to have a couple of awesome birth experiences. And I just wanted other mums to know that that was possible in whatever vein they wanted it to be.
Yeah, For sure. I was sitting down with 10 women the other night for dinner and 8 of us had had C-sections. And that just like blew my mind. And most of them were needed to do some massive healing afterwards emotionally because they did feel that their bodies had betrayed them. But not only that, they felt like they hadn't made the choice. The choice had been made for them and, you know, and they hadn't been empowered in their birth. And for me, my own experience was, and I've spoken about this in a podcast before, was that, you know, I went through 75-hour ordeal that ended in a C-section. But the main thing was I still felt empowered about it because I really knew my rights and I didn't want the decision to be made for me. I was happy to have a C-section, but I just wanted facts and, you know, I didn't want emotional kind of blackmail involved, which is what it feels like a lot of the time, you know.
Wanted it on your terms.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's sad when that is taken away from women and they're, you know, going in expecting an 8-hour water birth and coming out having had a very different experience. They weren't all that connected through the process, I guess. Yeah, it's tough.
And until you've given birth, you've got no idea what it's like. And we all hear the horror stories. And part of my mission, I guess, is not only to empower women to take ownership of their birth, but to be really excited about it. And part of that is by sharing and exploring other women's positive and empowered birth stories, many of which can be cesarean sections. But just to immerse yourself in hearing the words of other women who've done it before you and how fantastic it was for them. So I think it's really important to know that you have got it within you to have a fantastic birth experience, but you do have to do the preparation beforehand. And I think so many women will do the antenatal class and then basically turn up to hospital and hand over their power. You know, a stranger walks in, they might do internal examinations, you're in a foreign room, and all of a sudden it's pretty easy to lose your way and to get the wobbles and to forget your birth plan or how you thought it was all going to unfold. And you can really lose, as you said, that connection with what's happening. And I think the preparation that you can do during your pregnancy to be in a place where you are much more informed and empowered will lead you to hopefully being able to stay connected during your birth experience, and for you and your partner, any other support people that you have, to make the right decisions for you as they unfold.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you worked in corporate prior to that. Do you have, like, is your background in publishing, or like had you worked with a magazine before?
Absolutely not. The full extent of my magazine experience was literally picking them up to flick through whilst I was sat on a plane or a train. I had no magazine experience, no publishing experience, no editing experience, no formal communication experience. However, I did have probably nearly 17 years of management consulting experience. And what I realized is that a lot of the skills that I gained during that time of working with clients, understanding business requirements, translating those into documents or briefs or system requirement tenders, meant that I had a lot of skills that I really didn't appreciate and a lot of skills that were ultimately very transferable. So it was about 12 months ago that I was on Facebook one night. It was a Friday night and I'd been out with my man and I was a little bit tipsy, I have to say, and I saw a post from a group called Home Birth Queensland who were looking for an editor for their print magazine. And I remember leaning over to my man saying, "Do you think I could be an editor?" And he said, "Sure." And I went, "Yeah." So I wrote back to them straight away. It was like 11:30 on a Friday. I said, "I could do that." And the next morning I woke up and went, "Oh, right, what have I done?" And so I emailed them with a little bit more formal credentials, outlining the fact that I did have corporate experience of a sort, and I got the gig. And so funny, it was so cool. So I started editing an established print magazine and I loved it. I still do it, and it's like the perfect media for me because I am not a midwife or a doula or a GP or an obstetrician. I don't have that deep niche childbirth experience as a professional. However, I'm fantastic at networking and connecting with the people that do and linking them up with the mums that are really looking for the information. So I see myself as this sort of connecting, communicating middle person, and the magazine has been the perfect medium for me. It's the right pitch, it's the right level of information, and I can get it out to a lot of people. So I've been doing that for about 12 months and it has been the most amazing experience. And one of the real highlights for me was finding that there was women who openly and willingly wanting to share their birth experiences in all their raw, vulnerable glory, you know. And I mean, these are really intimate moments. And I was like, wow. But they were sharing them because they wanted other women who were pregnant to read them and to feel inspired by them. And that was a really strong, I guess, defining moment for me, was that I realized that women out there weren't just about sharing their horror and traumatic birth stories, which was all I had heard up until that point. Same. You know, it's that standard thing that you tell your best friend that you're pregnant and they say, oh, congratulations, that is so cool. Oh, my God, it is going to be the most horrendous thing. And, you know, and then they launch into this horror story and you sort of stand there stuck in this glee and terror. And so doing the editing of the print magazine was a really beautiful entree for me to say, oh, so there is this rogue subculture of positive birth women. I am totally going to tap into that. So I've been doing that for about 12 months, and it was about 3 or 4 months into that experience that I thought, how do I take this fantastic journey that I'm on but create something that's just mine? That print magazine is primarily for home birthing mums, and whilst I have also home birthed, I know it's not for everybody. So how do I take that kind of vein of positive and awesome birth experiences and share it with a wider range of women? And that was ultimately the birth of my digital magazine, which is called the Rockstar Birth Magazine. It was that vein of taking, you know, tapping into positive cesarean stories and positive hospital with epidural stories and positive home birth stories, and sharing those with the women that wanted to know about it. And I've been able to call on many of my corporate skills and experiences, which I didn't anticipate when I left. I must admit, when I left corporate, I remember thinking, well, that was a wasted, you know, 17 years. Bummer. You know, what am I going to do now? How do I start again without necessarily going back to uni? You know, I've got 3 young kids. What's like, eek? How do I take my birthing experience and my corporate experience and create something really cool? And I'm so blessed that I've been able to do that. And it's all just come together. And it's amazing how it's just really reinforced for me that a lesson I think I've learned, which probably I believe applies to everybody, which is that every experience you have is building you up and taking you closer to where you need to be, or to be on your journey. And none of them are wasted. Even the failures and the pain points and the lessons learned are all incredibly valuable, if not more valuable than what you think your highlights might be. So I've really been able to look back now on my corporate experience and say, that was amazing. And the skills that I've been able to get from that have been a real help to this. And I haven't wasted, you know, 17 years. And it's okay that I didn't go to university and study midwifery, for example. I've still got a really important story to share and skill to share that is going to benefit lots of women. And that's really cool. That's a really cool place to be.
Do you think that because you kind of just threw yourself in, if you had had this is like a total hypothetical, but if you had had 20 years experience in, creating your own mag, you know, do you think you would be, I guess what I'm asking is naivety, the fact that you hadn't really done much of it before, a blessing in your circumstance, do you think?
Totally, totally. If I really gave thought to what might be involved and gave into the fear that, oh, I really need a publishing background or an editing background or a comms background, like I would never have started. Probably the sleep deprivation of having 2 young toddlers gave me the blinkers to just say, oh, fuck it, just do it. Yeah. You know, like, what have I got to lose? Yeah. Just give it a red hot go, see what happens. And it's been so fascinating. It has just flowed. It has just got its own legs. I feel like it's a train that's bigger, that I'm just on for the journey. You know, it's bigger than me, and I've been blown away by how it's come together. So easily and with such grace. It's just been amazing. So I absolutely believe that by just jumping in and not even really thinking about it too hard, it's like, just let's go for it. Let's just do it. Let's just say we are a magazine editor. Let's just put it out there. Woo! You know, the first couple of days I was like, feels a bit cheeky. What if it's someone that really knows me and says, what the fuck you are? I'm like, I bloody am. I'm making a magazine. And it's been great. I've really stepped into those shoes. It was recently, though, I was only a couple of weeks ago, I was at the fruit shop. It was the middle of the afternoon and I was in my gym gear and the lovely young lady behind the counter was making small talk. And she said to me, do you work? And my first thought was, oh, she thinks, well, I'm one of these yummy mummies that lives around here and just flounces around in their yoga gear all the time. Good for them. But I was like, damn straight, I hardly sleep. And it was the first time that I said, I do. I'm a magazine editor. And I create this awesome magazine so that women have fantastic birth experiences. And I was all like cheesy smile and looking her in the eye. And she just went, uh-huh. It's a beautiful day outside, isn't it? And I was like, oh, my God. Clearly not my target market. But it was the first time I really stepped into those shoes.
And she didn't pull you up on being a fraud. So, you know, that's a positive. She didn't
say, are you sure? Did you go to uni for that? And it was the first time, probably as well, I think, because she was a stranger. I haven't described myself like that to people I already know, probably because I think they already associate me with my corporate role. And I wonder if, in saying this out loud, I'm a little bit nervous about saying to them, I'm a magazine editor, and really owning it. I think I'm going to have to do that. I'm going to test that theory over the next week or so. And even if they're just inviting me out for lunch, I'll say, yeah, I'll come for lunch. Did you know I'm a magazine editor? I've got my own gig, baby. Yeah, I think I do need to do that though, because there's definitely a need to step into, like, it's great to create this concept, but there's a real need in order to share it with the world. I need to own it. I need to acknowledge that I've created this thing. As somebody else said to me recently, do you consider yourself creative? And I was like, oh, no, I'm not creative. I don't draw. I don't dance. I don't play guitar. I'm shit in the kitchen. Like, there's no creative flair here. Another friend of mine pulled me up on it and said, you know, you've just created a beautiful 12-issue magazine with some of the most breathtaking imagery.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
And quotes and content. You are incredibly creative. That took vision. That took desire. You made that happen. Yes, you got a graphic designer in and there's a website dude and you've got photographers and contributors, but you created that. And I remember thinking, oh, right. So that can be creative. That's an example of creative, where I guess for me I'd always thought creative was artistic, you know, could draw, could paint. And they're not my skill sets, but I really had to say, yeah, actually, you're right. So there's an ever-evolving journey for me of owning this journey, if you like. There's an ever-evolving series of steps that I'm having to step up a little and puff out my chest a little bit more, and not so much about ego but about acknowledging what I have done and not sort of squashing it down or keeping it small. And that's a habit, I guess, or a practice that I'm still learning.
What you're kind of describing is what you described earlier in your birth. You know, you were talking about really owning your birth experience, and it's kind of like that now. Now you've like birthed this magazine, for want of a better phrase, and now you've got to own, you know, that last little push.
it's about stepping into my power. And it's exactly what you need to do in birth. You need to step into your feminine birthing power, you know, your innate wisdom about knowing what's right for you and right for your baby and making your choices and decisions from that. A lot of that from a birth perspective is about research. That doesn't mean you need to go and do a thesis on all the potential scenarios. It means you need to do the right amount of research for you, so that you will feel comfortable with however that unfolds. And for some women, that might absolutely be turning up to the hospital and getting the advice and guidance that's given and letting that just unfold. Like, you know, and that's totally cool as well. What I'm trying to look at, though, is for the multitude of women who have a birth experience that unfolds that they weren't expecting, who felt out of control, who feel traumatized, who don't feel positive about how their baby was brought into the world, feel completely positive about their baby, but really questioning how that happened. And so I think doing the right amount of research for you, the right amount of putting the right amount of energy into it that you need to do so you can own your power in that experience, so you can be your own personal advocate about what's the right thing for you and your baby because you know best.
I just want to ask you, you know, talking about that whole owning your who you are as a magazine editor and as someone who, I guess, empowers other women to have positive birth experiences, I just want to draw some parallels because it's not really what I'm looking to do. What I want to do is talk about your launch or the birth of Rockstar Birth. So, you know, I know that you mentioned before it's been very flowy and it's all kind of come together naturally, but there's, you know, as in birth, we have those, you know, periods of transition and all that kind of jazz. So what, looking at the journey of the last 9 months birthing Rockstar Birth, what would you say have been those moments where you've really come up against it and you've wondered if you can do it, you know? Those moments where, yeah, where you've questioned things or where you've come up against it hard.
So right now we're about to launch. The content is fabulous. It's all loaded. It's all fantastic. There's a few website tweaks and glitches that we just need to get right, and it's taking longer than I expected. My website dude is awesome and he's completely dedicated to making it happen, but I feel like I'm 10 months pregnant, you know, I'm like laboring around like a big heavy elephant and all I want is this baby out. You know that feeling? And
yes,
I am losing my patience with myself. I'm getting frustrated. I'm over it. Like I'm ready to change gear. Yeah. I feel like, and it's exactly like being pregnant. I feel like I've created and nourished and, you know, made this amazing baby, but now I just want it out there. And that in-between stage, like those last few days of pregnancy, and it's also a little bit like when you're pregnant and everyone texting you on your due date saying, anything yet? Have you had the baby? What's happening? Talk to me, you know, which is exactly the last thing you need to hear. When you yourself want to meet your baby more than anything else in the world, having all your friends and family contact you on the due date, because, you know, all babies are born on their due date, as if. And you know, it's like this extra pressure that you really don't need. And that's how I feel now. I'm not getting pressure from anyone, but I did put it out to the world that I wanted this baby out there. And the fact that we haven't hit my loose due date is ironic, really. It's sort of unfolding exactly like a birth would, because it's kind of like the baby will come when it comes. You can try and give it a nudge and you can have sex or have curries or go walking upstairs to sort of, you know, encourage it along.
Or be induced. Or
but ultimately your baby, well, yeah, and I'm not ready for that. So, yeah, your baby and your body know when the time is right, but this birth of this digital baby feels so reminiscent of that. So I was thinking today that rather than pushing through, like trying to push through the website and forcing, you know, by focusing on doing some more tweaks or writing some content, I think I probably need to step away. And this afternoon I'm going to go for a run or, you know, go to the gym and just actually, that's what I find works most effectively for me at these times when I'm starting to feel stuck and frustrated, is just to get out of there. Take an hour, focus on something else and come back to it, and then it will much more likely flow. And that's not to say that it'll be done today or it'll be ready to go, but I'll be in a much better frame of mind to deal with it. It's exactly like the end of your pregnancy. You can do all of the work and you ultimately still have to surrender to the journey. You have to surrender. You have to let go. Birth is not about being controlled and in control. By all means, be informed and empowered, but there's still a sense of flow that has to go with that, and that's right where I am now. Waters have broken, you know, heads down. I'm like, oh, my God, let's just get this baby out there.
Yeah, but you're needing to do a huge poo.
The ring of fire. But, yeah, she's not quite ready. So this last 24 hours, I'm just having to really exercise my patience muscle. everything that can be done is being done, and I just need to, you know, sit back and let that happen. I've got the most fantastic support, and, you know, like I say, it's all under control, but it's just me wanting to squeeze it out. And so I'm really exercising my patience button. The other point during this, the only other time when I felt a bit of a wobble was about 6 weeks ago. I released the first issue of the magazine for free and really, really wanted it to be well received. I also knew that I couldn't control how people did receive it, but I certainly had hopes that, not unlike when you share your first baby, you don't really want everyone to say it looks ugly or like Yoda. You know, everyone's got to tell you, even if it does look like Yoda, that it's beautiful. So I put it out there and I received this plethora of amazing feedback and well wishes and all of these types of things. And I got one message from someone I don't know, but who took the time to write me an email with the title, "Thank you for your magazine," and then proceeded to write paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of what was wrong with it. Not one thing was positive. And I was gobsmacked that she'd gone to all of the effort. She obviously believed what she was saying, but I was like, wow, you know. She said to me that I had portrayed all of the stories like fairy tales, and your birth was in that issue about your 75-hour labor and how you had had to really journey and fight for your rights. And I remember thinking, a fairy tale? So I just had to really sit with that for a moment and respect her opinion, wonder why she'd felt the need to go to such lengths to tell me about everything that was wrong. But it was also a really good experience because I responded positively. I wished her well in her own birth worker journey, but it was a fantastic experience for me to appreciate that not everyone is going to love everything I do, but I'm not here to please everybody. I'm creating something that is specifically for women who need to hear this message, and it will find them.
Yeah, for sure.
And that I just need to focus on that, that there might be people that disagree with the content or whatever, and that's okay. From way back, I'm a people pleaser. So I had to really sit with that and go, okay, hang on, this is a moment. There's a reason. There's a reason this is coming up and it feels a bit spiky and a bit icky. And it's because I basically need to learn to get over it and to not take it on and to let it go. So that was cool. That was a, you know, I'm grateful that that came up when it did, because I certainly needed to not build so much of a shell around it, but just really come back to, hang on, why am I doing this? And I'm doing it for all the women that need to hear this message, and that trust that the right women, not the right women, but the women who need to hear it the most will be the ones that hear it.
Yeah, for sure. Isn't it funny, like that idea of negative bias where you can have 300 people tell you you're amazing and one person tells you you're average, and you hear that one person, you don't hear the other 300. Yeah, surely that gets easier the more it's like exposing yourself.
I hope
it gets easier. Is there anything else that you want to tell us about your journey?
The only other thing that it's really taught me is that I'm not having any more children. Because, you know, when I had my last one, I was sort of like, oh, I think I always wanted four. I had just this four feeling in me. So I have three, and I've really just gone, you know, I feel so incredibly blessed that women share their stories with me and their birthing wisdom, but there's no need for me to have another one to put it out into the world. So I feel like this is my fourth baby. This is my last hurrah in terms of that sort of personal birthing space. And it's been a fantastic outlet for, you know, being able to share that love. But yeah, it's also very clear that that my ovaries are shutting up shop.
Awesome. At least
that's what I keep telling my man, because he is terrified that we're going to go again.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's On the Couch.
Biggest fear?
Going back to a 9-to-5 job or going back to corporate. When I left there, I didn't know I was leaving, so I left to go on to maternity leave, and I ended up having two children in 12 months. It was an extended period of maternity, and the thought of going back to the city, putting on high heels and talking, you know, stuff that really to me now sounds quite wanky, just makes my skin crawl. It's just not my place anymore. It's not the right energy for me. It doesn't feed my soul. Like there's just, woo, you know, this magazine had better fly because there's no way that I'm getting on that train again. It is a fear because, you know, it's a mama's got to make money, and there was certainly a good income when I was working in that field, but it's that real balance between getting paid and doing what you love. And right now I'm absolutely thriving. Like I love it. And in fact, I have every confidence it's going to be successful. It's more though that just that, you know, my fallback would to be go back to corporate because I can do it and I do a great job of it. It's just not my gig anymore though. It feels so foreign and misaligned with who I am now that would be a really, that would be a tough one.
Biggest struggle, like at the moment, what are you really struggling with?
It's the balance for me as someone with three children, two of whom are under two. I find that the work-life balance juggle is just, it's bullshit. Like there's no such thing, I don't believe, as work-life balance. There's just more and more work or more and more juggle. That's what it feels like to me. It feels like I'm juggling balls all the time. The balance is just not a real word. So the way that manifests for me is it's an effort for me to really stay present with what I'm doing at any given time. So when I'm with the kids, I struggle to just be with them and not be checking my emails or thinking about what I want to do next with the magazine or wondering when their dad's coming home. You know, it's a habit or a practice that I'm really practicing, and it takes effort. So I'm really putting the effort into doing that because I think it's really important to be with your kids when you're with them and to then work like a maniac when you're working. And I'm one of the things I've really found out of this struggle is that I'm becoming an absolute ninja at getting stuff done in 15-minute snatches. Like if I think someone's going to be coming and interrupting me in the next 15 minutes to, you know, change their nappy or whatever, it's like I'm going to get this done in 15 minutes. So I've just become much more efficient at looking at my to-do list and nailing something in 15 minutes rather than faffing around. But overall, the struggle is real. You know, it is tough to juggle a family and a business, just as tough as it is to juggle a family and working for somebody else. It's just tough, and it's not often that it flows smoothly. I feel like I'm always working to just stay one step ahead of what's happening next. And even if that just means making lunches or getting basketball uniforms ready or whatever, it's just, it's a constant series of things to do. So that's an ongoing struggle for me. I haven't found my rhythm in that. And my eldest daughter's died.
It's a lifelong journey, motherhood. Yeah. This is probably, I'm not sure how, but you know, I'm just going to ask it anyway because I ask it of everyone. Failure. What does failure mean to you? What does it look like? Have you experienced it? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
My current perspective on failure is that I failed when I wasn't living a life I loved. So I failed when I was pretending that everything was okay. So when I was working in corporate, married to my first husband, everything looked amazing on the outside. You know, we had a fantastic house on the beach. He's a really good guy. We had our health. We had lots of money. But I wasn't happy. And I felt like I should have just been grateful for what I had, that I should have just been feeling blessed and just kept going. And I did that for a long time, and ultimately it all came crashing down. And although it was an incredibly traumatic and heartbreaking experience all round, I definitely feel much more authentic and aligned now. And I've had that taste of what it feels like when I'm not, you know, doing the right thing for me, when I'm just doing what I think would make me happy or what I think is socially acceptable or, you know, is the normal journey, you know, get married, buy a house, have kids, etc. If it doesn't feel right in my gut, I've gotten much better at listening to my intuition and feeling it in my body. And so I'm no expert, but I'm getting much more savvy at knowing that I'm headed for failure or that feeling of being misaligned when I stopped tuning in and I stopped listening. So that was a really raw and tough experience, but it certainly taught me that would be my definition of failure. You know, if the magazine didn't fly, that to me I've come to terms with as being more of a lesson on the journey of the next stage, you know. So I don't have that strong attachment to it that I might have had at one stage, and I think that's because for me I've realized that failure is when I'm not feeling authentic and aligned.
For sure. I really dig that answer. Thank you. What would you say have been your biggest lessons in this birthing of the magazine?
It's been all about surrender. It's been all about letting go. We talked earlier about stepping into my power and really just doing it, getting it out there, not thinking too hard about it. It felt like the right thing to do, so I did it. So I'm operating much more from a feel rather than think perspective now, and when I do that, things just flow. The reason I'm struggling in this particular day is because I'm thinking too hard. So I'm thinking about how do I get this launched? How do I push this along? How do I make this happen? And straight away I'm pushing shit uphill because I'm trying to force an outcome when I really need to surrender and step back and just let it unfold how it's supposed to. So it's the biggest lessons for me are really about letting go, about stop thinking, start feeling, and just surrender, surrender, surrender.
Beautiful. Good answers, by the way. Good answers.
Thank you.
So we all have, you know, recurring voices in our heads, and sometimes there's a nasty one that says something again and again and again that probably isn't true or isn't true. What does that recurring voice say to you on repeat?
It's a little bit like what I mentioned before. It's a funny one. My recurring negative voice is be grateful for what you have.
Mm.
I used to find that quite an empowering statement because I do feel a lot of gratitude. I have an amazing life and lots of love and good health and fantastic experiences. But now when I hear that, either I say it to myself or I hear it in others, I actually feel really constrained. I feel boxed in. I feel like that's a self-limiting belief, that it's a ceiling and it's not enough. It's not enough for me to feel grateful for what I have. I am absolutely grateful for I have, but that's not it. I'm not going to just sit here and be grateful. I want more than that. And I want bigger and different. And so when I hear that in my head, when I come up against that, well, you know, everything's okay. Like, look at what you've got, be grateful for what you have. I know straight away that there's something I've got to push through, that there's a fear that I need to address, that there's a level I need to raise up to, because that's not enough for me. Being grateful alone is not enough.
So it's kind of like the be grateful voice is the one that says, be grateful for what you have, you don't need any more, stay small.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It is definitely a stay small voice, definitely.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, and it might not just be in my career perspective, it might be in relationships as well. It might be, don't cause a ruckus, don't cause any sort of friction, just be grateful for how it is. And I'm like, as soon as I hear that, that's a real sign for me that I'm about to play small, and I need to really be aware of that and really watch that. And I might choose to address it differently, but generally it means actually make the ruckus, make the noise, push harder, open it wider, you know, expand out, because it's not okay to feel constrained and boxed in like that. That was what led me down the path the first time when we talked about my sense of failure and staying in a relationship that was no longer thriving and working in a career that I didn't love for 15 years or more. You know, it's because I listened to that voice for so long. So now it's a really good signal that I absolutely need to do the thing that I think I need to do and not listen to that voice.
A highlight. What has been a real highlight so far in the rockstar birth story?
The biggest highlights, it's the little things, actually. Rather than one big thing, it's the little things. It's the private messages I get from women who I've never met from all over the world who say, oh, my God, I'm 30 weeks pregnant and this is the first time I've ever felt excited about my birth. It's the first time that I've thought this could be really enjoyable. It's the first time that I've stepped away from the fear and the horror stories. And these are women all over the world. I've had women from the States or from Europe, in the UK, South America. it's amazing the universal language that we have around birth all over the world. And so when I receive those little private messages from a pregnant mum on the other side of the world, and to know that I have somehow my magazine has positively impacted her and her day and her pregnancy and hopefully her outlook moving forward, that gives me goosebumps. You know, I just think, wow, like how I just didn't see that coming. How cool is that to connect with another woman on such a deep level, you know, about her most raw and vulnerable moments that are coming up and to connect in with her and for her to feel it so strongly that she then reaches out to me, a stranger, you know, who has had that impact, just really takes my, every time it happens, it takes my breath away, because every woman and every birth and every journey is so unique. So to know that it's being heard by thousands of different women around the world and that they're all interpreting it in the way that they need to, that's when I go, ooh, this is bigger than me, you know. I feel like a conduit or a connector, as I said before, and I'm taking all of this passionate, amazing birth experience that I've connected into and in sharing it with other pregnant women around the world, I feel like I'm raising the vibration around birth. And that's a really powerful feeling for me. It's like, yeah, really lifting the level of consciousness or lifting the vibration and putting birth up where it should be. It's an incredible rite of passage. And I think that putting more emphasis and effort and focus on the woman and her birth experience, not just about, well, you've got a healthy baby at the end. Like, that's a fantastic outcome, but it's not just about that. It's about having a healthy baby and having a healthy mum who absolutely rocked her birth, however it unfolded. You know, I want every mum at the end of their birth experience to feel like a total freaking rock star. I want her to feel like that person on the stage and there's 1,000 fans cheering and screaming her name, because so she should. She just brought another human being into the world. You know, I read a quote the other day and the last line of it was like, the world should be bowing at your knees to the woman that's just given birth. And I just think, fuck yes.
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
Yeah.
And there's not enough of that. And I really want to start tipping the balance around that.
Yeah. I'm just so passionate about what you do too, because from my experience from getting pregnant was really, you know, I had difficult moments in pregnancy, but overall I felt it was really magical. But I was so shit scared of the birth. Mm. It was the one thing that I thought, I know it's coming. Oh my God. Like, it just seemed extremely scary and overwhelming, and I really just wish I didn't have to do that to have the baby, yeah. You know, because I had heard so many horror stories. And so I went in full of fear, and I have absolutely no doubt that that fear resulted in the birth that I had.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't know how else it could happen for me. It had happened, you know, really shit for everyone I've ever spoken to. So why would it be any different for me? And it doesn't matter whether you do have a vaginal birth and it's you know, a 8-hour water birth, or that you do have it under the moon and, you know, whatever, or you do schedule in for a C-section because that's what works for you, then that's all good. Yeah, it really is owning it. And that's why I just wish it was out a couple of years ago when I found out I was pregnant, so that I had in my mind set up that it didn't have to be a bad experience, because I didn't know any other way it could go.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for putting it out into the world. Honestly, like, it, yeah, just the idea of it just brings tears to my eyes, because it's, you know, it's such a powerful thing, setting yourself up for what could be the greatest experience of your life, or going into it full of fear because you're shit scared about how this pine, you know, watermelon's going to come out of your vagina. Yeah.
And so, you know what? I find it really interesting that it's women who share, obviously, their birth, their horror birth stories with other women. I find it a really fascinating psychology experiment about why we do that. And I think that the reason that I've come to is I think that women often talk through and brainstorm on workshop with other women when they're struggling with something. And I imagine that for a lot of women who've had a less than positive birth experience, in some ways, part of their healing is saying it out loud and sharing it with someone else. I just think we need to retarget that away from the pregnant people. I actually think it's really bad manners for us to share a horror birth experience with a pregnant woman or a woman that may one day be pregnant. I think absolutely go and get therapy, absolutely journal about it. There are some incredible birth healing networks out there and birth healing specialists who can help deal with birth trauma. But I think sharing your birth story with a pregnant woman is like the height of rudeness. And yeah, I just think it's really, really uncool.
I totally agree. And, you know, and I totally hear that that's, you know, because I had to speak about my birth experience because I needed to heal from it. And, you know, and I felt empowered in that experience, but it didn't go the way that I planned. It, you know, it wasn't what I expected. Yes, I had a happy baby, but I still had some level of healing to do about the process. I felt like, yeah, my body had let me down a little bit. And I also felt that the medical fraternity had let me down a little bit too. So I had a lot of healing to do, and I absolutely try not to tell pregnant women my story. It's a story that I can share with women who have gone through the process themselves. It's a conversation for people who have experienced birth themselves. It's not a conversation to set people up going into birth with, fear.
And I think it's about how you share it. I mean, we have shared your story in the magazine, but that's because in your telling of it, retrospectively, you were able to share it in a way that you could see how it unfolded. You could see where you got the wobbles. You could see, though, where you really stepped into your own and said, no, you know, I need to make the decisions in this. Give me the space to make the decisions. And you then did. So when you chose to have a cesarean section, it was a choice you made with your caregivers and with your husband and with your support team. But it wasn't a fear-based emergency. And I think there's a really powerful delineation between those two.
Totally agree. Okay, so last question. What do you do for yourself, self-care and love? Do you have anything that you do regularly to show yourself that you dig you?
Do you know, it's funny. The last 2 or 3 years have been really tough, juggling 3 kids, 2 little ones, and a man that's away interstate often and wanting to put some real love and focus on the magazine. It has been a real struggle. And so I've really tried to tap into the meditation and the yoga and all of the things to make me zen. And I have to say, it's been a complete fuck up. I just am not built for it. And when I look back on my life and the times where I've been either under pressure or, more importantly, when I've been absolutely humming, it's when I run. So I am someone who needs to physically move my body quite actively. And I had a session with my kinesiologist last week. It was amazing and it was really powerful. But we talked a little bit about this and she went, hang on, all this yoga, Zen, meditation stuff is amazing for some people. It's totally not your gig. You are never going to get to the place of humming by sitting and trying to breathe your way through it.
Yeah.
It's just not your gig. You've got to get out there and move your body and start running. And I was like, oh, of course. So, you know, I've just in the last month rejoined the gym and I'm running 3 or 4 times a week and listening to podcasts whilst I do, which is amazing. So I've just really listened again to what works for me. And you know, it's that stuff about do the research or get informed about or tap into yourself and work out what's your bit. So yoga might work for someone, Pilates might work for someone else, you know, but it doesn't all have to work for you. Like, what's your bit? You are an incredible, unique creature. What makes you hum? And for me, it's running. So the minute that I stop running, everything just unravels. My man will tell you that. You know, he sometimes says, do you think you should go for a run today? Yeah. And that's really his way is that you are totally losing your shit, honey. Like you need to get out there and clear your head. And he's right. Like it's my religion. It's my meditation.
Yeah.
So my form of meditation happens to be running. And it's funny that it's taken me a few years of meditative pain to remember that. And literally within one session, I was like, oh, yeah, this is it. We've got it. We're kicking. Like, this is cool. So right now my self-care is all about
being physical.
Honoring the fact that I hum or cruise or feel at my most grooviest when I'm running.
Yeah, I'm the same. I tried it all. And, yeah, mine is the beach. And, like, I haven't been running for a long time, but it was running and it was just physical activity. And now, you know, at the moment I'm walking, but I'm, I'm actually about to, once I get off this call, I will be ringing my gym to get back into fight training because that's my that's when I feel really in flow, is when I'm, boxing, or it has to be very physical. I'm about to start running again too, because it's so about what works for you, isn't it? It's like just tapping into what makes you feel good and going with that, rather than thinking of what you should be doing and just doing what actually feels good.
Exactly. And that's the bit. I see all these, you know, Zen like yoga bunnies and I think, oh yeah, I want to be like that, but I'm not. You know, I'm not, and it's not my gig, and that's okay. So it's just really about respecting what is for me and absolutely going for it.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
My digital baby, the Rockstar Birth Magazine, is a 12-issue digital magazine. There's one issue for each month of pregnancy and three issues for the first few months postpartum. But I want to be really clear, this is not about, I'm not going to be telling you at 6 months you have to go and get your blood test for your glucose drink or whatever. You know, like, it's not like that. This is about getting you emotionally and physically and spiritually prepared to birth another human being and to do it on your terms. So it's really about turning scared and disillusioned and anxious into informed and empowered and excited. I want you to be excited about your birth. I want you to be really looking forward to that moment when you step into your own and you bring your baby earthside, however they exit your womb. And you can find it at rockstarbirthmagazine.com. If you come over and check it out, you'll find that the first issue is absolutely free. You can read it online in Wi-Fi. You can download it and read it on the train. It is yours.
And I'm in it.
And you know, Carly's there. Get a copy. I will also be adding new issues every month. So it's a 12-issue pack at the moment, but each month I'm going to be adding a new issue on a specific theme. So we're going to be talking about a cesarean issue, a home birth issue, a dad's issue, a healing birth issue. You know, we're going to start looking at your rockstar baby and your rockstar toddler, because becoming a mother doesn't just end once your baby has been born. That's really the beginning of the baptism of fire. And so those first few months and years are always an ongoing transition period. And so I want to make sure that there's the love and support that continues on through that, so that you continue to feel like a rock star as a new mum, because it's so important. You absolutely deserve to be respected and cheered and encouraged. And so that's what this is all about. This is about really getting you to a place where you are going to have the best birth experience possible and to feel really cool about that.
And I just want to add that this was recorded last week, so the magazine will absolutely be live by now. And if not, you can contact Shalom and ask her why the fuck not. Because she's going to be definitely having the induction if we get to that point.
The takeaway: exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
So my tip would be, is specific to pregnant women and or women who are considering getting pregnant. So anyone that's not pregnant, feel free to share it with a pregnant person. But there's three parts to it, and these are my top three tips for a rockstar birth. The first tip is to consider getting yourself a private midwife or a doula. Get yourself a kick-ass birth support team. You want a birthing bouncer. You want someone in there that's got your back. So no matter where you birth, I would really carefully look at investing in a midwife or a doula to be there for you. The second thing I would do is to, my second tip, is to get a birth breathing course. Get some sort of tips and tricks about how to get your baby out. You know, it's not like one born every minute necessarily where you're on your back screaming like a beetle and begging for the epidural. Find the things that you can have in your tool bag so when the moment comes, you can call on the affirmation, the visualization, the birth breathing exercise. Do the course and get empowered. And the third thing, which we've talked about today, is to immerse yourself in a birth bubble. Block out all of the negative shit. Have a script for when strangers at the bloody bus queue start telling you their horror story and just back away. And really surround yourself with positive birth stories. There are lots of fantastic sites and videos where women are sharing their amazing birth stories. And your homework is to read one every day. Tap into all those women that have birthed before you, had amazing experiences. Tap into their wisdom. Really get that feel, because you'll call on them when your birth gets intense, and all births get intense, even the positive ones. You will call on all of those stories and all of those women who have birthed before you, and you will use their power to get through it, and you will be amazing. And I'm so excited for you. And that's it.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on today. I'm totally stoked, and you're kind of making me feel like I want to have another baby, but I totally do not want to have another baby. Cool. Thanks for coming on.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Let's continue the conversation at carlynimmo.com. If you were a big fan of the podcast, I'd be stoked if you left a review. And if you want to hear more radness just like this, be sure to subscribe and spread the word. In the meantime, be real, be rad. Peace out. Thanks again for listening. If you really dig this podcast and you're keen to start your own but not really sure where to start, head over to radcasters.com and check out my brand new podcasting school. Until next time, peace out.